Well, as we heard in our bulletin, efforts are continuing to secure the release of the Irish woman Gina Herity and seven others, including a three-year-old child, who were kidnapped in Haiti. They were taken from an orphanage in the area of Kenscough, just outside the capital. In recent years, Haitian armed gangs have targeted a number of religious, charitable and medical aid groups. The UN office there estimates that 336 people were kidnapped for ransom in the first half of this year. To talk about the logistics of securing the release of hostages, we're joined by security and defence analyst Declan Power. Declan, thanks for being with us. I know you have some expertise, some experience in this area, and we'll come to that in a moment. But can you give us a sense, first of all, of how dysfunctional Haiti has been in recent years?
People are probably aware, you know, listeners would be aware of the earthquake in, I think, 2010, and you know, there was a large collapse of central authority. The US had to virtually annex it for a period, and there was a combined US and UN effort to restore order and to distribute aid. But long before that, Haiti had been in a state of chaos. And there was a UN mission at the time, a large-scale mission led by the Brazilians, MINUSTA. And then that ground to a halt, I think it was 2018, 2019. Then it was reconfigured, and then it ground to a halt. There were very controversial missions. There were the peacekeepers were accused of all kinds of abuses against the communities. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think, you know, blue helmets confer sanctity and that they're halos, but that's not always the case, depending largely on the troop contributing countries and how disciplined they are. That did no help. And it's ironic to think that Haiti has been left to its own devices. I mean, we see Lebanon, we see the Congo, for example, both countries that are suffering hugely, but they have maintained the UN presence significantly there. So Haiti is in an even worse state, I would argue, with regards to lawlessness. And oftentimes, during a war, either a civil war or a nation-state war, there is some set of rules to an extent. When peace treaties get signed, if the armed actors, if there isn't proper provision for the disarmament and demobilisation, the DDR process, as it's referred to in UN parlance, then you can have a greater level of chaos and a lack of safety. And that's what's really happening in Haiti, even though there hasn't been a war as such. So you have these different groups jockeying for position. The group that's alleged to have taken Gina Herity are an amalgam of others. So there's a degree of organisation and command and control being exhibited, and it's alleged to be led by a former national police officer. So what do they want is the question. Is it a simple ransom? I suspect not. I think it may be a combination. I think it's a muscle flexing issue. And this is the question that has to be answered before you can properly mediate an outcome and a resolution. What exactly is it that the group wants, the kidnappers want?
We know there has been some contact between the kidnappers and local intermediaries. Now, who are these intermediaries likely to be?
They can come from a variety of places. You'll hear references to, for example, our Taoiseach talking to people at the highest level, and that's entirely appropriate and should happen, and that's a box ticked. But it's important too that we talk to people at the lowest level, and I don't mean in terms of their capacity or competency, but it is, these things are often resolved through the good offices of people who may be working, local people, you know, citizens of that state, people well versed in that society, working in roles with humanitarian organisations, religious groups, whatever type of political apparatus that still exists, and indeed maybe commercial entities as well. A combination, those local networks are usually the essential route by which communication is opened and a resolution may be found. And the reason it's so important to have local intermediaries that are considered authentic, that have been assessed for their authenticity and reliability, is that they know the ground and they know the territory. And it's, while you may craft a very good message to the kidnappers, it has to come out of the right mouth. On a positive note, it's usually the case with most of the non-governmental organisations, and I'm sure that the one of which this lady is part of is no different, that they have security advisors, that they have applied what is known as, in the humanitarian world, as the acceptance-based security process, so that they have made themselves very much a part of life and a contributor to the enhanced application of humanitarian assistance in that area. And that usually leads to their enshrining of their safety. However, it can also put a finger on them when you get these armed groups who are looking for somebody to either be a cash cow for them or to make a political statement. So a Westerner, particularly a white Western European Westerner, is somebody that can be a prize to be taken in these circumstances where society has broken down, where you have a fractured civil society and no central authority.
Mm. And we should say that people are kidnapped and released all the time. I was reading an American report from a couple of weeks back about the release of five UNICEF workers who had been held captive, I think, for 3 weeks. You were serving with the UN in Darfur when the Irish aid worker Sharon Cummins was kidnapped. Can you explain the process that led to her release?
Well, without going into the essential details, I was detached from the civil military coordination section of the UN to assist with the Irish team that were sent out. And this was an early version of what's now known as an ECAT, probably one of the first ones, an emergency, then called civil assistance team. And now they're calling them counsellor assistance teams. So it was a multi-agency blended approach, which it's an interesting thing in its own right to get agencies like the Garda, the Defence Forces, the Department of Foreign Affairs and or whatever others to work in tandem. It's always DFA-led because it's their domain. It's primarily diplomacy. But depending on the nature, in Darfur, it was a heavily militarised region with a lot of armed rebel groups, a lot of government military groups, some unofficial, as in the Janjaweed, who were the biggest problem. They were like unemployed black and tans, if I can use that phrase. Just not too different in terms of how they would have been seen by the locals. And you have to understand how to talk their language. You have to understand their objectives. At the moment, I would imagine you have Irish diplomatic elements reaching out through various groupings on the ground, community groupings, NGO groupings that are already well established, that would be familiar with this group. In the experiences that I had with Sharon Cummins and with one or two others as well, it always starts and ends with local mediators, with, again, finding the right voices. The Irish team were very lucky to have a very experienced senior diplomat at their head. He's now retired, Brendan Rogers, who was, I think, Deputy Secretary General, who had been in Africa for a long time. He knew the terrain. In fact, we're fortunate. Our diplomatic service, they don't have the same resources as bigger countries. They have a lot of more ground to cover. So they tend to be quite adaptable. And they tend to get the communication thing. And also Ireland has a lot of good linkages through both NGOs and other states. So at that level, that was hugely important. And leveraging the access to the tribal elders in North Darfur, which is where the kidnapping had taken place, and where the two ladies, Hilda Kawuki, a Ugandan national, was held with Sharon as well. That was crucial to getting a successful outcome. Because one of the other things that can be forgotten about is it wasn't about using, you know, getting direct access. At one point, the team had direct access with the kidnappers, but they needed to hear messaging from people that they held in authority, like the tribal elders. But the tribal elders also need to have governmental authority. And sometimes the governments of the countries where these things happen, they'll say they want to see a successful resolution, but they largely want to have as little to do with it as possible because they already have egg on their face. So they need a nudge as well. And that's where our relationships with bigger countries, where our membership of the EU, our relationship with the UK and the US come in, that they can bring a little bit of pressure on the at the government level.
Right, so everything has to be leveraged. Listen, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Declan Power there.